Walnut Lake Shoppers. The store will be closing in 15 minutes, so please make your final selection and bring them to the front of the store, and our cashier will be happy to check you out. Thank you for shopping at Walnut Lake Market.
Dave asked you out yet?
No, he's still seeing Carrie.
Hold hands, you lovebirds.
You don't know what I've been going through, what worse is you don't even care.
Is there a problem, Jen?
Look, fuck off.
Craig, I'm sorry about what happened. I really am. But as far as you and I are concerned, it's over, and it's been over for a year now.
Jennifer.
Please, Craig.
Tonight we start marking down everything in the store, half price.
Why?
Bill and I are selling the store.
I'm not the one that wanted to sell the store, believe me. I've been here for over 10 years. I've made this store my life. Randy, I started out here as a butcher, just like you, and finally worked my way up to co-owner of this place. It's my home away from home. Oh, hell, let me put it this way. I own 49% of this place. He owns 51. That about says it all.
Craig was starting a fight.
That's not surprising.
And when they pulled Craig off of the guy, he was dead.
That's just great. And now he's out.
And here comes fucking Parker. Walking down 9 miles, swinging the head by the hair in one hand, and his hamburger in the other, and he's still eating it!
You killed Alma, but why?
For the store. Danny was always a big boss. He always called the shots on every business deal until now. I couldn't let that son of a bitch take the store away from me.
The night crew had nothing to do with it.
Oh, I couldn't let anybody stop me. I guess I just got a little carried away. Don't you see? I'm just crazy about this store. And I'm sorry, darling. I truly am sorry. But there's going to be one more killing here tonight.
Hi, this is Tony O'Dell from Chopping Mall, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode 126. And this time we're going to be joining the night crew when we review Intruder from 1988 or 89. So this one is one of it's another listener pick, isn't it, Joseph? Is it? Can you remember who chose this one?
Yes, I believe it was Mike Alishan. I could be wrong, though. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, look into that. But yes. So that would be... it'll be a fun one to talk about, but I should talk amongst yourselves because there's a cat desperately trying to break into the room. So I've got these visions of kind of like his.
I wonder which one it is.
He's just crazy about this podcast.
I've got visions of like The Shining, like you know, here's Johnny. So I'm just going to think it's good. I'm just going to check. So talk amongst yourselves. Just 1 second.
Oh dear. I can't believe this. Like, we're only 30 seconds into the podcast, and already cats have ruined everything.
So, how are you?
Fine.
I'm just crazy about this podcast. Danny Hicks sounds kind of like Nathan.
Yeah.
Does he?
Does anyone, nobody
don't
else?
You see, darling?
Yeah.
I'm just crazy about this store.
You say you do.
He does.
Wow, that's uncanny.
Never noticed before.
we would joke around about Evil Dead 2 because, you know, he's in Evil Dead 2, and I would always like to go, Bobby Joe!
Yeah.
That was Argento at the door, and I've let him in. Now he wants to go back out. So typical cat behavior.
What an asshole. Every single...
No, you should get a cat door.
Sitting on my lap. What, in the podcasting room? Well, I could do, yeah.
Flap.
But
you
anyway.
You need a big flap.
Oh, Eric. Enough about my cat flap. How are you doing, Eric, anyway?
Oh, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. No, tell me what you want, what you really, really want. Wanna discuss the 1989 slasher movie Intruder starring Elizabeth Cox and Danny Hicks.
Okay, right. So you had a little Spice Girls moment there.
Yeah, well, it was the 20th anniversary of...
It was indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Intruder is a pick by Michael Alishan, I can confirm.
Hmm. Good. Well, thank you, Michael Alishan. So we still have quite a lot of listener picks to get through, but I think it's fair to say this is kind of maybe one of the top echelon ones, isn't it?
Well, at least it's a slasher movie.
Arguably. Yes, at least it's a slasher movie for a start. Although somebody on the... Well, we'll get to the feedback later, but somebody's denying that, although I think that may be slightly tongue-in-cheek. But anyway, talking of tongues and cheeks, Eric, have you been up to anything?
Well, I've been watching lots of Bob Hoskins movies.
Oh, okay. Well, let's gloss over that. Oh, Eric. Goodness sake. Joseph, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Have you been watching Bob Hoskins movies?
No, I have not. Although if I were, it would be something like Shattered with Tom Berenger. Mm. It's very underrated but silly noir starring Bob Hoskins.
Yep.
Does any glass shatter in that movie?
Yes, as a pet-loving detective.
Ace Ventura. Have you seen that one, Eric?
Absolutely.
Yes. Sorry?
You seen that one?
I have, of course, seen Shattered, yes, many years ago.
Yes, I bet you.
I've been a Bob Hoskins fan for many years, Justin.
Yeah, I bet you. I know. But
you know, I have the feeling that you might have a thing for him.
Hmm. Oh. Ooh. What? Sounds like Argento had something for Bob Hoskins too.
Yeah, some nice pussy for him.
He's been very sweet. He's sort of sitting on me. So anyway, but thank you, Joseph. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. And now I've got Spice Girls stuck in my head.
Yes, well, that's unfortunate. But we were going to be... well, there's one thing, just a little bit of news, just off the back of that, is that the Arrow have announced the Blu-ray of The Burning with our commentary track on it. Which,
Steelbook,
indeed. So that's one of the commentaries that we were doing for Arrow that we can now announce, but it was top secret. There is another top secret one that we're going to be doing, which we can't announce yet. We're going to be recording that next month, I think. But I think this is going to be one that you will be quite excited to hear if you're a fan of the show. And, of course, why else would you be listening? So... But that's good. I'm a little bit hungover, and I mentioned to Eric just before recording.
Surprise.
Yeah. Well, I did have a good excuse. Well, it's not a good excuse. We had kitchen cinemas last night. What?
Yeah.
What?
Let's hear it. Let's hear your excuse.
Well, we had a kitchen cinema last night, which was projected. We watched Jaws, the original Jaws, and we had a beach party sort of themed night with inflatable sharks and rubber rings and... vegan fishless food, fish and chips. So ooh. Yeah, it was all good.
What's
I'm giving
fish?
You a pass now.
what is vegan fish?
Well, it's
it's vish.
Yeah.
Well, we had fishless fish fingers. I don't know if you have fish fingers in the States.
Yes, we have. Gardein makes these fishless they're not patties. They're like fillets or whatever, and they taste so much like fish, you got to wonder how they do that. It's just insane.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, we have like these kind of fish fingers, which were kind of like kind of staple kind of food for kids when I was growing up. They do like a vegan version of those. So we had those with chips wrapped in newspaper, and we had ice creams. Oh, straps.
What did you just do? Oh, that wasn't Argento. Wow.
Tell Argento Strap says hello.
Okay. Did you
they're
hear
all
going to
get their own little... Yeah.
He's licking his butthole, so... Yeah. Yeah. So, Okay, it's going to be one of those shows, isn't it?
Yeah,
okay.
It's funny you mentioned the cat licking its butthole, because I've been pestering my cat, because she's constantly cleansing her butthole. And so I changed her name to Puckered Butthole Cat, because that's all she does is cleanse her butthole.
That's a horrible name.
Yeah.
Puckered Butthole Cat.
poor cat. Oh. Well, Argento's been very sweet, but I'm not going to kiss his lips now. But no, let's talk about what we've been watching recently. So who would like to go first? Joseph, what have you been watching?
Hello. Okay, that was weird, but anyway, sorry. Yes, I started watching the new Netflix series, Stranger Things, starring Winona Ryder, and I'm not going to say anything about it, except basically she plays a mother whose son disappears, and there's a lot of weird things going on. watched two episodes last night, and this show is amazing. If you have Netflix or have access to Netflix in any way, watch this show. It's awesome so far. It's set in 1983. The period design is just phenomenal. The acting is great. It's, you know, suitably weird, creepy. Definitely a horror show. You know, one of the better ones I've seen since, say, Ash vs. Evil Dead. It's got that kind of wow factor for me. You know, I was shocked at how well I enjoyed it, and I can't wait to, you know, kind of binge watch the rest later this evening. Anyone heard of it or seen it yet?
I've seen the first episode.
What do you think?
I love the first half, but for some reason I kind of didn't feel I was that into it towards the end of the episode. But I'm willing to watch the next one, though, just to see. I mean, I really did love the opening scene, and I loved a lot of what happened in the first episode. But for some reason, the first episode just didn't really grab me yet.
Eric, Justin.
Well, no, I have heard of it, but I haven't watched it now because, again, my tolerance for TV or even internet web series is quite low, just because my attention span has gone so low. But somebody said there was a nice bear in episode one, but he gets killed.
Yeah, there is a bear in episode one.
But he gets killed, so there's no incentive to keep watching.
However, he is back for episode two.
Ooh, as there's a zombie.
No, there's no zombies in this show. That's some intrigue for you. The good thing about this show is apparently it's only 8 episodes, so you know, it's not going to take up a whole lot of time. But I'm really, really loving it so far. If it can maintain, you know, the quality for the remaining 6 that I haven't seen, then all is well. It ends well.
Excellent. Well, that sounds good. I don't know if it's I've got Netflix, but I'm not sure if it's kind of
It is on the UK Netflix. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, check it out later. Cool. Well, thank you, Joseph. Anything else?
No, that's pretty much it for today's episode.
Cool. Okay. Excellent. Well, Nathan, how about you?
I saw The Purge election year.
And did it live up to your expectations?
Yes, it surpassed my expectations. I love the Purge movies, and I know that a lot of people hate the first one, but I'm one of the few that loved the first one, and I thought the second one was even better. Now, the third, I will say, the third is not quite as good to me as part two was. It falls a little short of part two, but it's still really, really good. And I think if you liked part two, you'll probably like part three. Because it's, you know, it's more of like them like in the city, you know, trying to escape from people who are purging on that night. But it's kind of got a lot of political undertones, of course. You know, like obviously mocking maybe our current election system. But I mean,
nothing hilarious
I loved
about
it.
That at all.
No, there's it does not deserve mockery. It's a fine institution.
And it's perfect. But no, I mean, it's a really good movie. Everybody does a really good job in it. And, you know, there's at least a couple of scenes that are very satisfying to watch, is all I'll say.
Cool. Did you see that, Joseph? I know you were going to go watch it.
No, I have not seen it yet. I like the Purge movies. I like the second one more than the first one. I think maybe the them being chased by, you know, a band of crazed killers thing might be getting a little played. So, you know, I was joking around that maybe the fourth film should be like a comedy. I think it'd be kind of interesting if they did something else other than murder, maybe like, you know, some kid shoplifting and it becomes a comedy of errors or something. But yeah, what do I know?
I will say this one goes a little bit beyond just murder because you learn more about how the stores handle like looting and stuff like that on Purge Night too. So that was neat to learn, you know, what the stores do to protect themselves.
Yeah, I'll probably wait till it hits Blu-ray. Theater prices are just so, you know, so gargantuan these days. And every time I go to the movies lately, it gets ruined by a bunch of teenagers. So
gargantuan, I love that word.
Mm.
I so rarely get the chance to use it.
I was going to say astronomical, but I thought that might go over your head.
I hear the word gargantuan quite a lot, if you know what I mean.
Are you talking about your arse?
No. There's that as well, but...
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, thank you, Nathan. Anything else?
No, I don't think I've seen anything else. I think that's been... Wait. No, I have. I saw Tusk. And blah. I mean, to me, I don't know. It's just a weird movie, and it's not a movie I really could get into. I mean, I watched it at Grant's, and we were both just whatever. And he's the one that wanted to watch it so bad about this guy getting turned into a walrus. And ooh. I just watched it, and I'm like, whatever.
Is that the Kevin Smith movie?
Yes.
I have not liked his horror films at all.
I mean, I don't know. It's just a really weird, odd movie. And I know it's got its fans. And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, they're wrong for liking it, because we all like different things. I mean, I love especially stuff you guys hate. But it just didn't do anything for me. I just kept thinking, when is it going to end? So... You know, unfortunately, I wasn't a huge fan of it. But I will say that seeing this guy as a walrus was weird and very, very, very strange. It should be on that show Stranger Things.
Mm. Okay, I've not seen that, but I've not heard good things about it, so I've not been... But your interest was piqued there, Eric, by the idea of a man turning into a walrus.
Yeah, it just sounds a bit odd. But I was just looking on IMDb, and apparently the guy who turns into a walrus is a podcaster.
Get down.
Was he?
Get down. That's what it says. When podcaster Wallace Brighton goes missing in the backwoods of Manitoba... While interviewing a mysterious seafarer named Howard Ho, his best friend Teddy and girlfriend Allison team with an ex-cop to look for him.
Yeah, they're podcasters.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, he's the obnoxious one out of the podcast. And I think this is one of those movies.
The Justin, you mean?
The guy that turns into a walrus.
Yeah, I know. You could say he's the Justin of the podcast.
Oh,
he?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Eric, you're so obvious.
Yeah, and you're so... stupid. There, take that.
I bet you didn't see that one coming, oh, Justin. Yeah.
No, I'm still smarting from it.
Yeah.
It's going to take me days to recover.
Yeah, my quick wit.
Oh, Justin.
Yeah, thank you, Oscar Wilde. So, anything else, Eric?
Hang on, you're talking
to Nathan. No, Eric, yeah, sorry, you're talking to Nathan.
Oh, Justin,
how dare you? How dare you? that was it. So actually, now you may move on to Eric.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, thank you. My rhubarb lady things aren't playing, which is a shame. I don't know why that's not working.
Well, anyway, that's because it's not true. That's why it's not playing.
Oh,
it's true. We all
your computer knows that it's wrong, so it won't play.
No, that's. Curious, but also I'll have a fiddle, because if that's not working, then
well, Lord, not during the podcast.
What? Have a fiddle?
You said you're going to have a fiddle.
Yes. Well, to try and get it working, but it's just we might not be able to get the trailer working if I can't get my soundboard.
Well,
working.
The intro
anyway,
worked okay.
Yeah, that's what's weird about it, isn't it? But okay, well, Eric, what have you been watching?
Okay, well. I sought this one out deliberately because it has a connection to this week's feature presentation. It's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which has just come out, and it's directed by Burr Steers, who's one of the stars of Intruder. He's the guy who gets his head mushed by the trash compactor. So the title kind of tells you what you need to know about the film. It's in the tradition of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, in that it's this sort of lavishly produced mishmash of two very different genres that wouldn't normally be go together to make a kind of popcorn CGI enhanced multiplex movie, and like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which I did see, this one it's mildly enjoyable. But as someone who had to endure two Jane Austen novels when I was studying English in school back in the late 80s, I have to say that from what I can remember, I enjoyed watching this film much more than I did enjoying enjoyed reading Jane Austen's novel Pride and Prejudice. I can't remember anything about the novel. All I remember is that I thought it was deathly dull. So I can't tell you how much of the plot is integrated into Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but it is has all the characters, all the ladies trying to find suitors in 19th century England to the backdrop of a zombie plague. I don't know, it's just a bit meh, in my opinion. It's a 15s rated one over here, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was PG-13 in the States, because although it has action and, you know, lots of martial arts type violence against zombies, there's no real gore, and it's not really meaty in any way. It doesn't have the visceral kick of something like Evil Dead or Reanimator or Day of the Dead or any of those zombie movies that I loved from the 80s. As I said, it's very CGI and very much targeted at a multiplex audience. It's well made, but it just left no lasting impression on me. I can't say I found it boring. I just found it very, very, very run-of-the-mill. But then again, I'm quite weary of sort of modern cinema. I wasn't particularly fond of things like The Conjuring or Insidious or the other one that was like that with Ethan Hawke in it that I can't remember the title of.
Sinister,
that's it. All those ones I find merely okay, but I'm as with my taste in music, I just keep going back to the 80s, I'm afraid. So other people might get more of a kick out of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies than I did. But I don't know if anyone else has seen it. No.
I haven't seen it, no. I didn't. No. It didn't get great reviews, did it? It sounded like it should have been quite a fun movie, but
It is kind of fun. I thought the reviews were... Nobody said it was rubbish. I think people just all said it was a bit run-of-the-mill. That is probably a damning critique of the film. At least if it's rubbish, there might be something to enjoy in it, if you get my meaning. Because there's a film out at the moment called Gods of Egypt, which apparently is one that has to be seen to be believed for being awful.
That was kind of like a mega budgeted, wasn't it? And
It's from the director of The Crow and Dark City. I can't remember his name. Alex Proyas, that's it. It's supposed to be so awful it's hilarious. So I might actually seek that one out at some stage. I watched something much more entertaining, and it was a big surprise for me because I'd never heard of this before. And Justin, this is something that you might have seen in your youth. I'm not sure. But I was mentioning I was watching Bob Hoskins movies, and one of the extras on the Long Good Friday Blu-ray is a film by the same director called Apaches. It's a short film, a government-funded film about farm safety. And the reason I'm bringing it up is it's quite a horror film. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, is that the one where they kind of kids, you know, you get the bloody shoe rolling off, or that might be a different one, but is it kind of like the farm safety with the kids playing on the farm and horrible things happen to them?
Yes, it starts off with six kids playing cowboys and Indians, and one by one they meet Final Destination style deaths. And although it's not terribly graphic, it is really quite horrific, because like one of the kids falls under the wheels of a tractor, another one dies of poisoning by drinking some chemical they find in a shed, another one drowns in a slurry pit, another one is in a tractor and they're playing around on a tractor and the handbrake accidentally gets released and they go flying off a cliff.
I remember that. I saw that on YouTube. Like many years ago.
Mm. And this was all like this film was made for sort of 8 and 9 year olds to be shown in schools. Apparently, it's famous for giving kids nightmares at the time. And there's a huge nostalgia factor to the film. It was made in 1977. But it's brilliant. I mean, I love artifacts like this. I mean, I love old public information commercials and films, particularly from the 70s and 80s. There's a surprising element, horrific element to Apaches that I suppose it didn't surprise me because I knew the type of thing that was doing the rounds in the days. It's certainly not something you would probably see nowadays. But if you can, Apaches, it probably is on YouTube. If you can, I urge you to watch it. It's 27 minutes and it's great fun. It's a mixture of sort of silliness and sinister and horror. And it's bizarre, but really entertaining.
What was it doing on the Blu-ray of Long Good Friday?
It's from the same director, John McKenzie, who directed Long Good Friday, did this film as well. And I think just because there was a huge interest in it, they just stuck it on as an extra.
So it wasn't because one of the kids died when Bob Hoskins fell on them?
Oh, Justin. Bob Hoskins is very svelte. He's chunky, he's not obese, okay?
Okay, we take
your word for it. He's stout.
Yes, he's perfectly proportioned. And he's a gentleman. He's British.
He was.
Yeah. And he's got money.
He does. Did they bury it with him?
He was the complete package, Justin.
Okay, okay. Well, we'll leave you your fantasies there, Eric. But anything else?
No, that was it. Apart from watching The Longest Friday and Mona Lisa, which aren't horror, so I won't mention them to you.
No, okay. Right, well, thank you very much. What have I been watching? I caught up with on the Love Film, which we mentioned before is kind of what we get here is the DVD Blu-ray rental. Got Unfriended, came through. I think I mentioned last time I was going to watch it.
Oh yes, what you think?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was because I know Joseph, you're quite lukewarm about it, but
I liked it.
That's an understatement. I hated it.
Loved it.
Yeah, no, actually, I think because I kind of went into it sort of measuring my expectations because I knew that you didn't like it, Joseph. So, but I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, it's obviously silly, but I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. But I know we've spoken about that a fair bit before. The other couple of things saying we talked about Ethan Hawke, and I watched a film called Predestination with him in it, which is more of a sci-fi film. Have you seen that?
No,
I haven't. Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's good. Really good. I thought it was really. I didn't see what happened in it coming. It's basically kind of took me by surprise. But it's kind of like it's more of a like a time sort of loop sort of thriller. But Ethan Hawke's usually pretty good in films.
Based off the Robert Heinlein novel By His Bootstraps, I believe.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But that was good. And the only other thing I saw was a Nicolas Cage movie, Pay the Ghost, which was pretty generic and awful.
Pay the Ghost.
I know. Well, it was just kind of it was like Nicolas Cage goes to Mardi Gras with his son in New York. Well, there's some kind of Halloween or some kind of celebration, and his son vanishes, and it's all to do with some kind of ancient ghost of this woman who had her children burnt at the stake by some Christians back in the day, and she kind of takes children on Halloween each year, but it's one of those things that's just so generic that it's kind of you forget every detail after as the credits roll, and Nicolas Cage isn't over the top enough in it to make it interesting. So,
now wait a minute, Justin. Did you not see was it Knock Knock?
Oh yes, of course, yes. Or Knock Knock as well, which was the Keanu Reeves, Eli Roth movie with the two women seduce a married Keanu Reeves when he's home alone for the weekend, and then turn into the kind of the morning after kind of dates from hell. It was kind of, I was looking at Stuart and we were just looking at each other and saying, I can't believe what we're seeing. We're just discussing whether or not Keanu was how knowing he was in his acting, because Keanu, as we know, he has certain limitations. It's probably a charitable way of putting it for some dramatic ranges, and this stretched every single one of them. So when he was going completely over the top and in literal hysterics, it was kind of very funny. But I'm not sure, because it's from Eli Roth, so I'm not sure if they were going for that. What do you think? You've seen it, haven't you, Joseph and Nathan? I'm not sure about you, Eric, but
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Oh, you haven't seen it. Okay. No. What did you think, Joseph?
Well, you know, like you said, you know, in certain movies, Keanu he can be pretty effective. But here, he's I'd say for that first half, you know, he's subdued and he's a likable fellow and he's pretty good. But and they kind of turn the volume up a little bit, you know, for the second half, and boy, he goes over the top big time. Chew some scenery, and I guess he tries to shit a few Oscars out, but it doesn't really work.
Ew.
But it's not really engaging enough to be memorable, but it is unintentionally funny enough to be memorable. So kind of middle of the road, I guess.
Yeah, Eric and Nathan, you should seek it out because I think you'd both really enjoy it. It's it is kind of like one of the kind of not exactly home invasion, but it's those kind of like kind of Babysitter from Hell type things, but Keanu just gives it's hilarious. moments towards the end. He's got something. They put like a gag in his mouth, don't they? And he's kind of like he's going, "You fucking bitches!" like this, and they're really rolling his eyes.
This is hysterical.
It is hilarious. And then at the end, they bury him up to his neck and force him to watch. Well, I won't go spoil it, but it also ends with a Pixie song, which
force him to watch. Crazy Fat Apple 2. Oh my god, they're so evil.
Force him to watch a Toya video. Nice.
Hey!
But it's definitely it's kind of had the same kind of what the fuck kind of vibe to it, like Nurse 3D had or something. It was wannabe shocking, like it was like Eli Roth was kind of looking to make his like House on the Edge of the Park type style movie, but it turned into a kind of unintentional camp fest, or maybe it was intentional. I just don't know, you know, because Keanu's on the Blu-ray talking about his role, and he seemed to be quite knowing. So I don't know, you know, but it's it's definitely worth a watch if you enjoyed bad movies.
Oh, sorry, Justin, no, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh.
Because my mother still a bitch for a fucking pig.
So Neil got that working again. So,
it's back. But
I was curious if this is supposed to be a remake of that movie from the 70s with Colleen Camp. Is it called Death Game or Death?
It's
Game?
It's a loose remake, loose retelling.
Okay, because it's very similar. I mean, the guy married Home Alone, and the two crazy girls show up at his house. I mean,
she cameos.
It just seems like it would be.
Yeah, she cameos in it.
Oh, does she?
And Sandra Locke, did she play the other girl in the 70s one?
Yes.
Because she produces it as well. So, yeah, it's definitely, I think that's definitely the intention.
Because
Colleen, she's not there for, she just cameos as one of their friends who just turns up on the doorstep at some point. So, yeah. So, yeah, definitely kind of a remake. I mean, it's kind of amps up the sleaze and the violence to, well, she's not actually that violent. Really, the film particularly, but the sleaziness, it's kind of very, very sleazy kind of film. But then that's kind of Eli Roth all over, really, isn't it? So, but I'd like to think he made it with like knowingly, but otherwise, whichever way, if it was knowing or not knowing, it's very entertaining and in a bad movie, a gloriously bad movie way. So, yeah, definitely recommend. So, cool. Well, if there's nothing else to say, should we go on to... Now I've got a soundboard working again. Should we go on to the main attraction?
Sure.
And, what, me?
Yeah.
No. Oh. That's a minor attraction.
Sideshow attraction.
Sideshow Bob. Hoskins. Anyway, here is the trailer for Intruder, and Joseph will bring us back after this.
It's closing time.
The store will be closing in 15 minutes.
But the night crew still has work to do. Because there's one last customer who isn't satisfied.
No, this creep keeps calling her. He's driving us nuts.
Leave me alone.
He wants to slash their prices.
Who's there?
He wants to cut their inventory. He wants to chop until they all drop.
I saw him kill Linda.
And now, he's turning their retail store...
There's gonna be one more killing here tonight.
...into a wholesale slaughterhouse. Producers of Evil Dead 2 and Pulp Fiction comes a new chapter in terror. Starring Dan Hicks, Bruce Campbell, Ted Raimi, Renee Estevez, and Sam Raimi in Intruder, a new dimension in terror.
I'm just crazy about this store.
When you check out of the Walnut Lake Supermarket, you really check out for good. A crazed killer is turning the whole place into a human butcher shop. The night crew is disappearing one by one in a bloody rampage of terror and gore. And the maniacal killer is saving the best for last, the innocent and beautiful head cashier. So drop by the market for a shopping spree you'll never forget. There's no express lane to escape from the horror. Okay, I'd say Intruder could either be the greatest satirical parable about the job market in the Bush senior years, or just a zany kind of madcap slasher movie with, you know, heapings of gore. I'd like to think both. It's directed by Sam Raimi, Evil Dead cohort Scott Spiegel. And so the film kind of stops short a hair or two of kind of indulging in the manic, go-for-broke visual kind of bravura of a Raimi film. It feels more like Spiegel is kind of poorly aping Raimi's style rather than, you know, baking his own concoction. You know, whereas Raimi's, like, dolly zooms, you know, tell a portion of the story in, like, say, Evil Dead 2. I don't know, a turning doorknob here doesn't really do the plot any kind of favors. But that's no matter. For me, anyway, this is kind of like late 80s slice and dice, you know, slasher movie heaven in my book. It's kind of capped off with the sort of, you know, the no-holds-barred kabuki finale, you know, well-earned by the previous 80 minutes, you know, kind of wallowing in every type of murder gag you could possibly think of. It gets so blistering and over the top at one point that the lead girl's kind of basically just wandering around the store finding body parts, you know, every which way but loose. I kind of chuckled more than once, like, say, when she backs herself into a corner, you know, and finds a severed head, and then, you know, not 10 seconds later, a corpse just comes rolling down the product conveyor belt. And this kind of goes on, like, with those little shock bing on the soundtrack every time a dead body part pops up. I guess there's kind of a lack of tension in the film. I mean, it's more of a, I guess it kind of wallows more so in the Three Stooges territory than it does actual suspense. You know, and that's, not a knock against the Stooges, who I love, but, anyway, the film makes up for it, you know, kind of by being just zip fast, frantic and fun at every turn, in my opinion. I don't know. It's inhabited to me, at least, by, you know, an extremely likable cast, you know, for me, none more so than the actual killer himself. And here's a spoiler if you haven't seen the film or several of its box covers that give it away. The killer turns out to be the disgruntled co-owner, Bill, basically upset that the majority shareholder is selling the store out from underneath him. He's played by Dan Hicks, best known as the idiot hillbilly Jake from Evil Dead 2. He's so good here, it's kind of scary. He balances that sort of, all shucks, I feel sorry for this poor guy, kind of aesthetic with a completely off his rocker reveal. And he engages in the type of, the histrionics that would make even, say, Bruce Campbell, you know, who of course cameos here, take notice. I don't know, by the late 80s, I think the slasher movie, you know, it kind of pretty much been the whale, had been pretty much pumped for all of its reserves. But I think Intruder manages to take, you know, a threadbare premise and, you know, make it what it needs to be, which is basically just fun. You know, it's not going to win, you know, not going to bruise any forearms or, you know, earn some chewed fingernails from suspense or anything. But it's I think it's a riot nonetheless, just zip, zany, kind of throw some blood, see what sticks kind of fun. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, my introduction to this film was on, as you can imagine, a very heavily censored VHS release in the UK. It would have been probably about 1990, I guess. But I was kind of savvy enough to know at that stage that the images I had seen in Gorezone and Fangoria were not going to be on the print I was going to eventually see. So I went into it expecting not to see any of the gore gags, and of course that is exactly what happened. So I can't say I was disappointed with it when I saw it first, but it didn't really leave much of an impact. I was like, all I could think of was, oh, what could have been? So, you know, I would class this film along with the likes of something like Pranks or The Mutilator, not just because they're both low-budget slasher movies, but because my first introduction to them was severely cut versions. And because when I finally got to see uncut versions of the films, my appreciation for them, you know, went up considerably. So it kind of does rely on its gore effects, I think, for its kick. Whereas, and I've said this before, something like My Bloody Valentine or Friday the 13th Part 2 was able to work really well without, you know, having all the gore taken out of them by the censors, but they still managed to be great movies. Whereas something like Intruder, I don't think was a great movie without its gore gags. As you said, there's kind of a lack of tension in it. The characters are fairly likable enough. Some of the acting's a bit ropey. Not that that's an issue, because as a slasher fan, we're used to ropey acting. Certainly with some of the bloody films Nathan comes up with, which seem to have been Amdram Productions. Missing the gore on that first viewing. Had I seen the uncut version on the first viewing, I think this would be a real classic for me, and it would be one I'd have a huge sort of a nostalgic fondness for. But I saw it once in 1990 and then didn't see it again until it came out. It came out on a bootleg, a work print edition came out in Germany about 15 years ago, and I bought that, and that was the sort of the next time I saw it. I think the supermarket setting is terrific, and they make good use of it, because it doesn't exactly feel claustrophobic. They make great use of all the different spaces. And I like certainly some of the familiar faces in it. I think Sam Raimi is good. It's great to see him on screen, even though, I mean, he is not the world's greatest actor, but he's fun in the film. And of course, we get cameos from Bruce Campbell. Renee Estevez is in there from Sleepaway Camp 2, which I know one of Nathan's favourite actresses, I'm sure. And as you say, Danny Hicks, I think, probably steals the film. He's the best actor in it, and he makes a great maniac. And as I said earlier, I don't know if we were going to include that clip I was saying earlier. He sounds exactly like Nathan. Sorry, Nathan. I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
That's okay.
Okay. And I know the silly angle shots, I think, are dividing opinion. I was looking at some of the responses on our Facebook page, and people were like, oh, what's the point of a point of view cam from the inside a telephone? But I kind of liked those gimmicky shots. I mean, I'm a big fan of the old 3D wave of the early 80s, which were really gimmicky. And when you're watching them in 2D, they're just ridiculous. There's some ridiculous shots in something like Friday the 13th Part 3 or Jaws 3. And again, in Intruder, they're unnecessary, these shots. But I like them. I like the quirky thing of having a doorknob turning and the camera turning with it. But as I said, it's the outrageous gore effects that really make the movie, and there's some spectacular effects in the film. The guy getting his head bandsawed in two is really, really good. And it's not nasty violence as such. It's that fun Friday the 13th Evil Dead type of gore that I really like. It's not sort of Saw level nastiness, because the film has its tongue in cheek, so you know, to sort of take it in that kind of spirit. I also like some of the little gags in there. Like every time somebody is killed, like when Ted Raimi gets killed, there's a sign there saying beware of sharp knives, or when Burr Steers gets killed, you see a sign saying crush proof boxes beside him. And I also like, did anyone pick up that Sam Raimi is singing the song from Evil Dead when he's doing his cling filming of,
yes,
of the meat? Yes. I don't consider the film a classic, but I do really like it. And as I said, I would encourage people to seek out the super... Well, I think the only version you're going to find these days is the super gory version. I would avoid old VHS releases of the film. Thumbs up from me. And in terms of 1989, when its competition was films like Nightmare on Elm Street 5 and Halloween 5 and Friday the 13th Part 8, it's certainly streets ahead of any of those higher profile releases, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, Justin.
Similar to Eric, I first saw this on a very, very cut VHS. I think it was Colourbox, might have been the label.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, it gave away the identity of the killer on the box. It just seemed, which to me always seemed odd, even the trailer gives away the identity of the killer, doesn't it, really? I mean, it's kind of, for a whodunit, it seems like they were purposely trying to give it away. The only other video cover that's a spoilerific is the old British preset, which I used to have, of Communion, Alice Sweet Alice, which shows the killer with their mask off stabbing the fat guy to death. So it always struck me as odd that when you're doing a whodunit, it's like having an Agatha Christie and then having the killer on the front of the cover. It just seems odd. But anyway.
But Jason's on the cover of some of the Friday the 13th posters, and that totally gives away who the killer is.
Yeah, but they're not set up to be whodunit, are they, Eric?
Sometimes I wonder if the marketing...
I was being silly, Justin.
I know you were, Eric, but
sometimes I wonder if the marketing people who release these like on video and stuff, sometimes I wonder if they've actually even seen the film or if they're just handed like a bunch of stills and they think, oh, this one looks good. Let's just throw that
on
there.
That's what I imagine happens. Yeah.
Very possibly. But I kind of echo actually quite a lot of what's already been said. I do find the all the gimmicky shots a little bit grating. They're fun, but I think it's kind of it was almost Scott Spiegel hadn't found his own voice really, and he was aping what Sam Raimi was doing. And I think unfortunately, comparisons between the two aren't favourable. I don't think the film really needed all of that kind of gimmicky shots. But again, the fact is, they kind of, I mean, who knows, maybe Scott Spiegel, when they were making their short films, influenced Sam Raimi. Maybe it was that way around. I don't know, because this is based on a short film, wasn't it, which was made with a kind of more, but apparently it was made more kind of like soberly, in so much had like more of a Michael Myers style killer stalking teens at like a late night grocery store. I like it well enough. It's not one of my favourites. I think the gore definitely adds something to it. And I think, like Eric, that when I first saw it, I might have been, you know, if I'd seen it with all the gore added. Like Eric, I remember Gore Zone magazine with the cover, which had the very bloody, shocking cover, basically, the guy's head being, after it being bandsawed in half. And I still can't believe that was sitting on new shelves, you know, in supermarkets.
Yeah, I know.
It's kind of, I mean, one thing I did want to throw out, what you thought. Do you think, you know, that there's a scene where Bill falls off the ladder and then the killings start? Do you think he banged his head and maybe that caused him to go mad? Or do you think he was always, because that's the other thing, it didn't although he was saying he had to kill everyone to make it look like and pin it on the main boss, it didn't really make much sense, did it really, that he was killing off everyone in the store?
Well, he just said he got
Oh, go ahead, Joseph.
Oh, he was just saying he got carried away.
But, like, I mean, it's so awful because they were on his side. They didn't want the store to close any more than he did.
Mm.
They're out of jobs. It's like, oh, okay, you're out of a job. Oh, yeah, and you're dead too. Yeah. Sorry about
that. I think maybe his mindset was that he blames everything on Craig and he stops Craig. He becomes a hero and he keeps the store, maybe.
But Bill and Danny are the worst bosses in the world because Danny fires you and Bill kills you. I mean, they're awful.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it well enough. I thought it was, you know, it's still a lot of fun. And if you haven't seen it, I would definitely urge you to, you know, seek it out because, as Eric said, it's a straight ahead slasher, you know, with all the gimmicks and the kind of tongue in cheekness of it. But it's kind of miles ahead of a lot of what was being made around 1989, 1990. It actually has although it's low budget, it doesn't feel too low budget, does it? The grocery store works as a really good kind of slasher movie locale. And I wonder if that possibly inspired the scene in My Bloody Valentine, the remake, in the grocery store, you know, because it's, you know, very possible. But yeah, that's my tuppence.
Uh-huh. And quite good tuppence it was.
Thank you.
Nate Dogg.
Rhubarb Dogg.
This movie is a 10 out of 10. I mean, it's dang near perfect, to be honest with you. I mean, it's got everything that I want in a slasher movie. I love the location. I love all the gimmicky camera shots. I think they're awesome. The gore is fantastic. I love the final chase scene. I mean, there's nothing I dislike about this movie. There's not one thing I don't like about this movie. Because even though I think Bill is a terrible boss, I still find his character very likable and funny. I mean, I guess if I was going to get killed in a horror movie, you know, at least maybe he'd make me laugh first, you know, tell a few jokes before, you know, you crush my face in with this box, whatever that crusher thing's called.
Trash compactor.
I'm not very mechanically inclined. but the scene that always bugged me, and it doesn't mean I dislike it. I've always wondered why is, you know, the guy that set up, his name has just left me suddenly, but the guy that gets the bandsaw through the face, what's his name? It's not Craig. It's,
Bub or his name?
No, Bub gets his face crushed.
Yeah.
I cannot.
Not Randy.
I was paying attention to the film, but I just can't remember his name. Yeah.
Is it Steven? But, I don't remember. Anyway, go ahead.
But y'all know who I'm talking about.
Is it Tarquin? Yeah,
no.
Sebastian?
No. You're going to go through all the names you can think of?
Yeah.
Brenda?
Brenda? Yeah, it's Brenda.
Inga?
When he gets attacked, his lack of fighting back is just hysterical to me. I mean, he's basically letting Bill just pick him up off the floor, hold his head down, and push it through this bandsaw. Like, and he don't do anything but flail his arms around. There's, like, no defense whatsoever. It's just, okay, here you go. Go ahead. Saw my face in half. And I always thought that was weird because I'm like, any normal person in the situation would be, like, fighting like crazy against this guy. But it's just, no, I won't be doing that.
Funny you should say Inga there, because she gets her head sawed off by a bandsaw type thing in Bloody Moon. Sort of. Similar-ish. Yeah.
Similar. But no, I mean, it's an awesome film. I absolutely love it. I love the short film because I have the Blu-rays, so I watched the little short film as well that they put on there that was the precursor to it, and I thought that was a lot of fun too.
I was going to ask, so they've actually got that on the Blu-ray, because I don't have the Blu-ray. I watched it on YouTube actually, but
It's on the Blu-ray. Well, it's only 6 minutes of it, isn't it? Because the full 20-minute version is missing. Yeah.
Okay.
Justin, how could you?
Yeah.
Now, I thought the heroine, the Elizabeth Cox, she plays the heroine in the film. Cox. And I thought that, yeah.
Sorry.
I thought that she did a really good job, but I kept wondering, like, I'm surprised they didn't have Renee Estevez as the final girl. I mean, I really like her, so I would have loved to have seen her in that role.
I think she's a better actress. Renee Estevez, I think, is a better actress in this, anyway.
Yeah, I'd say that. I'd agree with that. I definitely would. But, I mean, unfortunately, it was spoiled for me before I watched it, because when I rented it on VHS, back in the 90s, I think, is when I saw it. When I rented it on VHS, the cover is the artwork of the final girl, like, in the foreground, and kind of in the background is Bill, and his shadow is the, you know, menacing figure. And I'm like, so the whole time I'm watching it, I'm thinking to myself, he's the killer. I mean, the box already says that. So why are they acting like it's Craig? I just kind of thought they dropped the ball on that. I hate when they give away an ending to a film on the video artwork.
I think even without the artwork, it's still pretty obvious it's him throughout the whole film.
But no, when I saw it, I was like a little kid. I was probably like 10 or 11. So I wasn't good at guessing that kind of stuff. So it probably would have shocked me. But I mean, fantastic film. What else can I say? It's in my top 20 for sure.
One thing I'm wondering is, I wonder if I spotted a plot hole here in that when Bill is revealed to be the killer, you know, he's basically telling why he's done it. You know, he said he couldn't let Danny sell the store from him, and then he just got carried away. But if you watch the film, he actually kills the Renee Estevez's character before he kills Danny. So I'm wondering why he would, you know, and she was leaving. I mean, she was already gone. Why would he go out there to kill her and then kill Danny's character?
And if you think about it, if you think about it, she would have been able to back up his story if he was going to blame Craig. She would have been like, yes, he's right. Craig showed up and caused all these problems. So I'm like, I mean, so I'm thinking he's just insane.
See, I'm wondering if they shot, you know, the scene of him killing the girl outside, and it was meant to be placed after Danny, and the editor just kind of goofed, or I don't know. It's just kind of weird. I guess no one has anything to say about that.
Well, I mean, I did. I mean, what? I agreed with you because it doesn't make sense that he would kill her. But to me, it still doesn't make sense that he would kill the night crew in general. I mean, he could just kill Danny and just say that Craig did it. I think everybody would have probably, you know, agreed with him.
But he just got carried away.
But that's why I wondered if he hit his head when he fell off that ladder, and maybe that's why he went nuts.
Maybe I never he noticed inhaled that before. The fumes from the bleach that Elizabeth Cox was using to clean the checkouts.
It could have been.
Mm.
But I never noticed the ladder bit. That would actually make some sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could go with that. I was curious, though, since this movie has the crazy gore effects, like, which death scene was your favorite?
Bandsaw.
It has to be the bandsaw,
yeah,
doesn't it?
The bandsaw. Yeah. That's a good one.
Mine's the bandsaw, but it's very closely followed up by the head crushing, because I thought that was a really good one, too.
Mm. It's very rubbery and gooey and very 80s and latexy. Yeah. I've just made up loads of new words there.
But Nathan, I was going to ask, because you've seen that, the 6 minutes of that, the original film. When was it made? Is it kind of, does it look, is it
it's
like...
It's 1979, isn't it, Nathan?
Yeah, it looks very 70s or early 80s to me.
Okay. I think he says it's 1979.
Because
yeah.
I've actually got it on in the background right now since y'all were talking about it. I pulled it up on the TV to watch. And yeah, it's definitely old school. I love the mask. They got a really cool mask in this one.
Mm. And Sam Raimi is one of the main stars in it, by the looks of it.
Okay. So, but is it kind of like more like Halloween-esque sort of rip-off? Is it kind of
It reminds me a bit of Savage Weekend, the mask, kind of.
Okay. Oh, and I have to check that out. I wonder if that's on YouTube. Maybe.
Yeah.
What? Well, it's on YouTube. I can't believe
you don't have it on Blu-ray.
No, I don't know why I don't have it on Blu-ray, but I still got the old VHS copy. But I thought, well, I can't, because I suddenly thought, well, I watched that, and I thought, well, that's going to be really, really cut. And I thought maybe just for old times' sake I should watch it, but I thought no. And then I had a look around and saw it was on YouTube. So I thought, what the hell? It'll take too long to get it from the States. So that's my excuse anyway. I'm sticking to it.
Shocking.
I kind of wondered what was up with, you know, Ted Raimi's character. He seemed kind of incidental to me because he was never really in the group scenes. He's always seems to be like in there chopping up watermelons.
His headphones. Yeah.
He was supposed to symbolize the alienation to youth.
Yeah. This movie has a lot of layers, don't you know?
Yeah, because he's so he's so distant from the rest of the group, and he's on his own listening to his headphones, and he represents isolation and loneliness. And despair.
Because the one guy says, hey, you lost your job. Of course, he's got his headphones on, so he doesn't even know.
That's probably why he's so happy. He looks so happy throughout the whole film. He doesn't know he's lost his job.
And his death would be, he got killed from behind, so he probably didn't even know what hit him.
Yeah. The lucky ones die first. Yeah. Mm.
Burstier's character is very. We were speaking of Keanu earlier. He was very Bill and Ted, wasn't he?
He was, rather, wasn't he? Yeah.
So a bit over the top. Yeah.
They'd like him to narrate their life.
I tell you what, though, I'm so glad that his brother had that Hamilton Beach blender handy to take care of Craig.
Yes.
I love how he just so happens to, you know, name the brand of it. Well, if Hamilton Beach is here, we'll give you $50 to, you know, to add to your budget if you'll just say our name in your film.
But anything else we want to say about the film before we go on to some feedback?
You mean background?
Sorry, background, yes, background.
Just to say it's not perfect, but for a late 80s film, it's close.
Cool.
It is perfect.
Justin, do you remember Jonathan Ross's program from the late 80s called The Incredibly Strange Film Show?
Yes, I do. Yeah,
it was different filmmaker every week, half-hour special, and 1 week Sam Raimi, and they interviewed him on the set of Intruder, which he was then referring to as Micro. Mm. And they actually show gorier clips in that TV show than actually appeared on the VHS release when it finally got released maybe 2 years later.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, they showed like Sam Raimi getting hooked onto the meat hook in a scene that isn't actually even in the final print of the director's cut. It's in there. It's on the extras as a bonus deleted scene. Yeah.
I always wondered how that killed Sam Raimi's character. Anyway, just having a meat hook put through your mouth shouldn't kill.
Yeah,
him,
I know.
I'm sure you'd bleed to death. I mean, I'm sure there's.
Yeah, but he bled to death quite instantly.
Yeah. unless it went up into his brain. But yeah, because I've got there was a fanzine which was do you remember the Deep Red fanzine?
Chaz Ballin.
Chaz Ballin. And they had like some artwork on in that magazine. I still got it around somewhere, which showed the original poster art for the film as Night Crew, the final checkout. And I think it was just like a shot of a severed head on a conveyor belt. What were they called? You know, the checkout conveyor belts with someone doing groceries, and the head was going to be next to be scanned. But I thought it was such a much better title, wasn't it? In a Night Crew final checkout.
Definitely. Yeah, Intruder is just so generic.
Yeah,
it doesn't really tell you anything about the movie.
No,
and it's crazy that they made them change the title from that to Intruder, and I'm like, you just made them change it to something that's like so bland.
It's also kind of misdirection, because the intruder is not the killer. It's the I guess it's kind of a cheat.
It's
maybe
the extruder is the killer.
Yeah,
I'm just making up more words now.
You are, Eric. You're on the roll.
Schnookablooku. That's another word I made up.
Yeah, it never gets old. No.
Nope.
Nope. So,
unlike you.
Anyway, moving on. So, should we talk a little bit about background?
Sure.
Who would like to go first, Joseph? What have you got?
Okay. I guess in perhaps the biggest nod to the Three Stooges, the old customer, Mr. Abernathy, he's played by Emil Sitka, who was a constant Three Stooges foil back in the day. He kind of reprises his most, his infamous catchphrase, the "Hold hands, you love birds." That's from the Shemp era short Brideless Groom. Let's see, more so on the Three Stooges front, Bruce Campbell cameos as Officer Howard, which is an obvious nod to Howard Fine and Howard. I can't remember watching the credits, but I do believe they use the fake Shemp as the stuntman. I could be wrong. I know that Raimi and crew usually do that in their films. I'm not sure if they did it in Intruder or not, but I didn't have a look. As we said, the film was originally titled Night Crew, The Final Checkout. Much more fitting title that actually plays into the film's plot more so than that diversion title Intruder. It also went by at some point Nerve Endings, Night of the Intruder, Blood Night, and several foreign titles I won't even begin to pronounce. Filming took place between March and July of 1988 on a supposed budget of $130,000. It was shot in an actual grocery store in Bell, California at night when the store was closed. More so on the production, the entire film was shot on short ends, which is basically, unused, kind of discarded bits of leftover film that they sell to sell to film crews at, at a fraction of its markup. The head in one hand, the sandwich in the other bit was previously used in 1987's Raising Arizona. I know the Coens and the Raimis are kind of, tight with one another, so I'm sure that was an homage to them. Raising Arizona, that is the Coen brothers, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, let's see. The film was partially based around Scott Spiegel's experiences working at the Real Walnut Lake Market in Michigan. Wow. Was he involved in a mass murder? Anyway, as we said before, it was something of a remake of an earlier Super 8 short film by Spiegel, which was called Night Crew. And that's all I have for background.
Okay, well, thank you. What about you, Nathan? What have you got for us?
Well, the only thing I really have was the short film, but we kind of already discussed that.
Okay, well, thank you anyway. That's my fault. So, Eric, what about you?
Okay, well, I heard something different about the location. It was actually on the commentary track for the Blu-ray. He says it was a supermarket that had actually closed down, just recently closed down. So as you say, it was completely empty, so they had to buy in sort of spoiled goods to fill the shelves with. Producer Lawrence Bender cameos at the end as a cop. He, of course, went on famously to work with Quentin Tarantino on virtually all of his movies, Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, From Dusk Till Dawn, etc., etc. And he was dating Elizabeth Cox at the time, but he says that has absolutely nothing to do with her getting cast.
Well, he's like 70 in this movie, wasn't he? And she was like 12? That's sick.
No, Lawrence Bender.
He was the other cop with Bruce Campbell, right?
Yeah, with Bruce Campbell, he's the younger one.
Okay.
Calm down, everyone. Calm down.
God, Eric.
I know.
Don't scare me like that.
Charles Band actually helped fund the movie through his Empire Picture Company, although eventually it was released to video via Paramount. Burr Steers, as I said, went on to become a director. He directed Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and The Life and Death of Charlie St. Cloud. And he's also the guy who's referred to as Flock of Seagulls in Pulp Fiction, the one who gets shot by Samuel L. Jackson.
That's him? God, I never noticed that. Wow.
Yeah. KMB, this was their first major project, the effects company. Greg Nicotero, Howard Berger, and Robert Kurtzman, is that the same? They were working on Deep Star 6 by day and working on this by night, apparently, at the same time. I think that's all I have that you haven't mentioned, I'm afraid. Yeah. So, Justin, back to you.
God, Eric.
I know.
How could you not have more?
Well, there's not actually that. I've pretty much covered everything apart from. I was going to say, it doesn't look like it got a theatrical release at all, does it? Looks like it went straight to video via Paramount. I don't know if there's anything else actually, because basically all the stuff I've got is all the stuff you've.
One thing I will mention here is that I found this in a magazine, and I don't think this is in any way true, but they have reproduced a cover of The Intruder. 18 rated release on Colourbox, and it has a sticker on it saying, "Warning, this copy is for sale in Republic of Ireland only. It is uncensored and therefore illegal in the United Kingdom." Now, I cannot imagine for a second that an uncut version of Intruder was released in Ireland and not in the UK. So I imagine that this is a bootleg, because the reviewer does say that the gore scenes are of a lesser quality than the rest of the film. Right. So I imagine it's some kind of bootleg somebody made up and slapped that sticker on the front or something to make it look legal or something.
Okay. Yeah, I remember something about that, actually, yeah. The only other thing that I've got, just to mention about what Scott Spiegel has obviously gone on to do quite a lot of films, but one of his upcoming films sounded quite interesting and might even be like a return to this type of thing. And it says, let me find the thing. I think it's called Spring Break 1983 or Spring Break 83, and it's a comedy, but it says the Zed Rose four friends who were bullied by their graduating high school class find revenge against the now freshman college students while on spring break during 1983.
I think I read about that. I think that was completed about 4 or 5 years ago, and it's stuck in a limbo or something.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think that's what I read, yeah.
Okay, well, thank
you. But he did go on to do Hostel Part 3 as well, and From Dusk Till Dawn 2. So he hasn't really gone on to mega-budget films. So he's doing a lot of straight-to-video sequels and things.
Cool. Okay, well, is there anything else left to say about Intruder before we move on to some feedback?
You're playing hard to get. Right off. Sorry.
Right.
Nathan could have done that better than I could have.
I thought that her hiding place, you remember when she hid in that little like cupboard thing, that little cabinet or whatever, was a great hiding place.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Nosebleed. I'm glad you mentioned that, because she had the nosebleed throughout the film, but when he realizes that she's in there because of the nosebleed, was there something else? Did she spill something or did she pee? Because that was a lot of liquid on the
floor.
She
broke a bottle, didn't she?
Yeah.
Okay. Like a bottle fell when she was trying to open the cabinet thing.
You're obsessed with the toilet today, Joseph. It's absolutely disgusting and so childish.
Well, that's what happens when I talk to you, Eric. You bring out the toilet humor in me.
Why are you saying I'm childish?
Yes, you are childish.
I'm sophisticated.
Let me just tell the listeners, what you hear on the show is nothing compared to what he sends us in group chat.
What?
Oh, no. Oh, God, you see what we get through. It's
disgusting. Oh, Eric. Eric, you're playing hard to get.
It's uncanny, I swear.
Yeah.
It is.
Hard to get. I can ham up a southern accent. More so.
Where
than
is
one
is Danny
have.
Hicks? Is Danny Hicks from Tennessee or around your neck of the woods? No.
I don't think so. Actually, I don't even think he really has that thick of an accent, because if you watch something like Darkman, it's more subdued. I think he puts it on for show in a lot of these films.
It's from Pontiac, Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan, that's definitely not the South, no.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, well, thank you for that. Let's play How to Get in Contact with the Show, and we'll come back with some feedback after this.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281, and you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Yes, please get in touch with the show. Let us know what you thought of us, especially Eric.
What?
So, Joseph, do you want to give a summary of what we've got on Facebook?
Sure.
Intruder?
Sure.
Thank you.
I will do that right now in 3, 2, 1. Anyway, this is from Jenny Hall Cameron. She says, I always, when watching this, felt it was just a bunch of friends who got together one weekend and were bored and thought, let's make a movie. Not a waste of time, but also nothing to write home about. If I were to see this movie today, it would be like the first time because it's forgettable. Let's see. Our good friend Kieran Edwards says, good, not great slasher with some pacing issues, which happens sometimes when you turn a short into a feature. Great effects, decent moments of suspense, and I actually like the killer and his dedication to his job. He still doesn't hold a candle to this killer, and he posted a link to the short film killer card, which I loved. Let's see what else we have here. Just scrolling through. Oh, 1 second. My scroll bar just decided to jump about 10 feet. Duncan Maitland says, about time, but I'm still waiting on the final exam review. Which it is coming eventually, so hold your horses. Chris Thompson says, oh my God, this is so not a slasher movie. Deadly Friend, The Fog, Sightseers, The Terminator, Candyman, and Rabid Grannies, I get. But this? You guys are seriously losing it. The hysteria continues? More like the hysteria concludes. I think he's right. I think this is the nail in the coffin for us.
Yeah, yeah, must be our last show.
Yeah, let's see. What else? Bill Ackerman says, it's funny for a genre where John Carpenter's original Halloween plays such an influential role, not to mention the giallo films of Mario Bava and Dario Argento. The directors of slasher movies almost always downplay any flashy directorial style, whether it's directed by a young film school rookie, a former porno filmmaker, or even a Hollywood veteran responsible for something like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. The technique is often intended to be invisible. Most effectively scary movies successfully make you forget that you're watching a movie at all. While I enjoy Intruder as entertainment, I think it shows how relentless visual creativity that calls attention to itself can sometimes be at the expense of building tension. Still, likable characters, a brisk pace, good use of a single location, and interesting images do count for something. Levi Olson says, the gore is excellent, but the direction is over-stylized, attempting to borrow from co-star Sam Raimi. A camera within a rotary phone may be a novel idea, but it doesn't tell the story. Intruder is not one of my favorites. It's not even in the mid-range for me. And I love Death Nurse 1 and 2. Wow.
Is that Nathan?
Yeah, it's Nathan's
alter ego. Because I would love Intruder as well. I love all three.
Let's see. Bob Hartshorn says, a so-so slasher entry that tries way too hard to ingratiate itself with the slice and dice classics of old. Despite efficient execution, great gore, fun cameos, and a decent payoff, it never quite makes the grade. Seems to be missing that magic spark to make it fly to the moon. Solid but unremarkable. Mikey Faulkner says, a bit forgettable despite some good gore. I thought the killer's identity was too obvious and I couldn't care less about most of the characters. With possibly the most annoying final girl in existence and identical male victims. On the plus side, Bub is glorious and I want him to narrate my life. Yeah, I was mentioning that earlier. John Matthews says, brilliant. Our stupid Australian VHS art had the killer on the front cover.
I think everyone saw Arch had it on the cover.
Yeah. Let's see. Sebastian Bokenkamp. Bokenkamp. I hope I'm pronouncing that wrong. Anyway, worst part of the movie is that the trailers and some of the posters spoil the killer's identity. Okay, this is the new Alan Dale joke. Let's see. Someone keeps mentioning that the killer's identity is spoiled. The killer's Alan Dale, okay? Let's just move on. The killer's Alan Dale. Anal Love Dog or Alan LaDog says, just rematches this with friends who had never seen it. Just rewatch this with friends who had never seen it. Autocorrect, I assume. Some nice gory bits and some fun camera angles. It takes a while to get going, but at least that lets you get to know the characters. Have to say, though, worst supermarket ever. Asia Raimi? Wow, is that like Asia Argento and Sam Raimi's love child? Mm-hmm. Says, finally, can't wait. Oh, God. Why do I have to pronounce these names? I'm not good at this. Mate Elguela Clavel. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. He says, sweet. Joseph Pearson? Pearson? Been waiting for this one. Love it. And here's a name I can pronounce, Mike Sanders. He says, not bad, but not great. There's no tension between kills, so you don't really care when someone dies. And I found the killer was extremely annoying. Bill was not annoying. You take that back, Mike Sanders. Jay Bullington says, bad acting, great kills, good fun. And finally, Soren Feltfoss Thompson says, never seen it. The toaster knits before lunch. What?
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 Knits before lunch.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah. But that's all the Facebook feedback I have.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you. I've got some feedback here, but Nathan, have you got anything?
No.
No? Okay. How about you, Eric?
No.
No? So is it just me, or have you got some more, Joseph?
No, I have nothing else.
Okay, right, well, I shall read this out. So, to the gents of THC, Dan from Texas here. I enjoyed your episode on The Fog. And whether or not it strictly fits the slasher criteria, there's nothing wrong with branching out a little to examine a worthwhile film. I wrote in a while ago singing the praises of the outwardly rubbish, but still, I feel, underrated Don't Look in the Basement. Since then, I've been trying to think of a more conventional slashers to suggest the programme, something a little obscure that I don't think has been covered yet. I came up with Haunts, a.k.a. The Veil, from 1977. I'm not sure how difficult it is to find. I found it in some bargain bin horror collection I picked up ages ago, but it must be streaming somewhere. I know it stars Maybrit and Cameron Mitchell and involves grisly scissor murders in a rustic farm setting. Also, lots of sexually repressed angst, kind of like Repulsion, done hillbilly style. It's been long enough that I forget who turns out to be the murderer, but I remember being pleased with the ending. It may have had more to do with the little twists in the execution than actually keeping the mystery mysterious. Have you seen Haunts? You might find it a good topic for discussion. I plan to dust off my copy and brush up soon after I finish today's screening of Carry On Cleo. Thanks for keeping things up your end. Up on your end. That's directed at Eric, I think. As Kenneth Williams probably said. So I managed to do a double entendre even one of. Anyway, talking about Carry On. So there you go. Best as always, Dan Fields. And it's, I presume this is his Twitter handle. It's at DLF the Critic. So thank you, Dan. Now, Haunts is. I'm trying to think. I'm not. Don't think I've seen it, although I get it mixed up with another. Oh, what was that? It sounded like someone sneezing and expiring at the same time.
Yeah, that was a sneeze. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Has anyone seen Haunts to start off with?
I don't think
yes.
so.
No. Oh, you have? Okay.
I don't remember the movie all that well. It's been a long time, but I do remember that great box art with a girl in the shower and the killer hovering over her.
Yeah. Is there something in the telephone box in that film, or am I getting mixed up with something else? Because I know Cameron Mitchell was in lots of slasher movies, wasn't he? Toolbox Murders, The Demon, the 1981 South African slasher. Also, Memorial Valley Massacre. And quite a few others, I think, in the sort of 70s and 80s. But
Memorial Valley Massacre. I love that one.
Yeah. Wasn't that that was yeah that was linked to the Sleepaway Camp films, wasn't it? Was it supposed to be? I think.
Or was it?
Mixed up something. Yeah, maybe I might be getting mixed up with something else. But yeah, that'd be a fun one to cover.
Yeah, I think you're getting mixed up with Sleepaway Camp 2, which was a sequel to Sleepaway Camp.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Eric, for stating the obvious there. but I'm sure that I read somewhere that it was somehow supposed to be linked. But anyway, doesn't matter. But yeah, Haunts, I've got a feeling I might have watched it, but I can't remember. It must have been a long time ago if I have. But yeah, that sounds like a good suggestion. It will be at this rate 2054 before we get off listener picks. Yes. So it might be a while before we get to it. But no, thank you, Dan. Yeah, I'll have to sort of check that out. Sounds good. So so there's no more feedback.
That's it, I think.
Yeah. Was that an elephant? Go on,
yeah, it does sound like an elephant. Dumbo.
You're hearing things. What's going on?
I don't know.
Did you not hear Nelly the elephant there? I did.
Oh, yeah,
I don't hear anything.
I heard an old Nelly.
So, well, we are having, just to announce, we are having a little bit of a summer break now. So we'll be putting this show out today, and we won't be recording for another 4 weeks or so. We're not, you know, it's just with summer holidays and everything coming up, it's just proving a little bit tricky to get us all together in not exactly one room, but on one Skype call at the same time. So, but we will be back with Nathan's pick is coming up. So all of you, I think it's already the kind of cat's out of the bag on Facebook about what it's going to be, but this is a very Nathan pick, isn't it, Nathan? Do you want to tell listeners who don't already know what we're going to be covering next time?
Oh, the Slumber Party Massacre Part 2 with a guitar drill.
Yes. Yeah, the rock and roll slasher movie. So it's going to be an interesting one to revisit because I remember having mixed feelings over that one. So,
oh God, I think I like it even more than Intruder. So, and that's high praise because I love Intruder.
High praise indeed. So yes, fantastic. Well,
oh, sorry. Yeah. I spoiled everybody for the next episode because they wouldn't have known if I was going to like it or not.
No,
and then I ruined it.
Yeah, they were all on a knife edge, weren't they, waiting for that declaration? Yeah. But I think it's probably safe to say that this is the kind of film that is right up your street. But but yeah, so have a good summer holiday, everyone. And obviously, you can also always go back and listen to our now vast back catalogue of 126 or whatever episodes of The Hysteria Continues. And we will be back, and also hopefully next time we record, we'll be able to announce some more upcoming commentaries that we might be involved with for a number of different companies. So, and also we should know by then when actually, have we got a street date for the Arrow Blu-ray?
For
the Burning.
I don't remember reading a street date. Did they announce? I don't think if they announced one or not.
No, okay, but no, that should be that was a fun one, fun film to talk about, wasn't it? We got quite a lot of talk about lubricated rubbers and stuff in there. So
that's all we talked about.
That's all we talked about for 90 minutes, yeah.
Fisher Stevens' nutsack.
Yeah. So if you like that kind of commentary, then tune in for that, or buy the disc, rather. Any last words before we shuffle off to various summer destinations?
Yes, I'm just crazy about this podcast.
Don't you guys see? I'm just crazy about this podcast.
It is uncanny. Go on, Eric. You do it.
Your turn, Eric.
I don't mind. Okay. I don't mind being, you know, duplicated if Nathan does.
I'm just crazy about this podcast. It was uncanny.
Oh my God, that sounds just like Danny Hicks in that movie.
You have a thicker Southern accent than Nathan does.
I know.
Now, Justin, it's your turn.
No, I can't do accents, as we know. So what are we playing out with, Joseph?
Actually, I got a little creative. This is Together by the...
Well, that's hardly Toya creative going in one sentence.
Eric,
how dare you.
Shut the fuck up, Eric. Don't you ever bring up...
Rhubarb lady!
Don't you ever bring up... Toya again. I think it's time to retire that bat.
God, are you going to let him speak to me like that?
Justin, do you allow this on your podcast?
It's like that coup in Turkey, isn't it? It's kind of like...
Totally, it's like the coup in Turkey.
Mm. It's Joseph's trying to take over the podcast. But I can't...
No, no, this is the Together by the Intruders. I'd like to think of it as the love song between Bill and his supermarket.
Well, thank you very much. So we'll play out with that, and we will see you after Lashings of Sangria and Suntan Lotion. Ooh. In August. So, yeah, say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
But shows rimming them. Yes, yes, I'm rimming Joseph and Nathan. They've got a very big tongue.
For the news, Nathan will be telling us something about a film from 1984 that was made for £2.50.
Yeah. I'm just crazy about Justin's toilet.
He's just crazy about that whore.
Do you think Justin would survive in an intruder scenario? Already run and hide in the loo, as he calls it.
I can't imagine him aggressively fighting back now.
He'd throw
I can imagine Nathan doing it, though.
He'd throw his Susie and the Banshee records at the murderer.
You start playing, the murderer run away.
The fact is, I think anybody should aggressively fight back against a murderer. I mean, if you're able, of course.
Yeah.
Yes. You hear that, Justin?